Few announcements to start out. First, I wanted to kind of, thank Nate for joining us for a while. Nate Wenstrup's been, with us just a short while, but we've really appreciated his help, and he's going to be moving on to another position. Oh, is that Don?
Yep.
Hey, Don. We just got started. And Katya's on the line, and Laura's not here, but may join us a little bit later. Kevin, Dave, Alana, and I'm sorry, I forget the name of your colleague.
Steve Ricard,
who was with us last meeting, is also here from USAO. That's all we're expecting, so we're going to get going here. I just want to say again, thank you to Nate for all his help. There's some work of his that you'll be seeing here coming down the pike soon, but he will be leaving basically beginning of December, and so you won't see him at the next meeting. We are looking for applicants and doing some interviews already, trying to move quickly to hire for that position. So I think I sent an email out to everybody a while back, but I encourage you, if you know somebody, it's a unique position, both in terms of substance, but also, our ongoing status beyond this fiscal year is unclear. So that's an important factor, I think. And we have a residency requirement, various things that kind of might make it a challenge for some folks. But if you know of somebody, please do encourage them and do it quickly, because we are moving fast with the hiring process. Second, comments are due on the, especially report 41, or only report 41 is the only outstanding report. There are a number of other memoranda surrounding that. But comments are due, again, basically a week from this Friday, November 15th, on that, the ordinal rankings. We can talk more about that here in the meeting. If you have questions about, like, kind of how to respond or how to kind of, what assumptions to make. The following week, so the week of the 18th, about 2 weeks, we expect to issue another set of recommendations that is going to be chiefly kind of putting it under the privacy and other offenses, but it's child pornography, obscenity, indecent exposure, a smattering of some property offenses, kind of residual stuff, so this batch of reports, it'll be a smattering, but several that have to do with obscenity or pornography will come out in mid-November. I expect, give everybody probably about 6-7 weeks, something like that, into early January after the new year. And alongside that, I want to note that, news has been reporting, in a possible federal shutdown. If that occurs, I think if it's a week or less, we won't change those deadlines at all. 2 weeks or more, probably will. Somewhere in between. So I guess I would just encourage everybody to, given that uncertainty, to do try to, when you get the new reports, dig into them, and, again, if there's questions, contact us. But hopefully having a deadline in early January is going to be sufficient for this material. I think it should be. And let's see, I guess that's it. Last thing I just kind of mentioned again, our next meeting is, don't actually have it up here, December 4th. And again, by that time, we'll have up this new set of draft recommendations on obscenity and and some other matters, and that will be the primary issue, as well as comments that we received back on Report 41, the ordinal rankings. Before we get to that Report 41, I wanted to check back. Our last meeting, we had a number of kind of questions we addressed and about the weapons recommendations and the comments we got back on that, and self-defense phrase 2, reports 39 and 40. I don't think we had any more questions at this point, although I will kind of, for you all, I will kind of flag that, you know, right, there are some home rule prosecutorial jurisdiction questions that kind of arose in those recommendations. Of course, we recently had a new court opinion that kind of is in that zone. We're looking at that. I'm sure you all are looking at that. You know, it's not an area of great clarity to begin with, and so we will be trying to nitpick and figure out what the current state of law is on this, but I don't think we have any kind of, and I suspect your offices are also aren't ready to kind of like declare a new stance on these things based on that opinion. So we'll review that. You are well on that one. On that one matter, yes. On what was it? Yes, was the trash dumping.
Dumping. Yes. It was regulatory.
2,000 illegal dumping cases we just sent your way.
Exactly. Ha ha ha. Yeah, you guys might be smart.
I would not be able to feed my children.
We will examine that more. If you have more thoughts, either informal or you want to put something right, great. You know, this stuff is hard. And again, particularly with firearms, right, like it's a bit different. There's some different possible authority one could rely on for firearms. Legislative history is different. All of these things matter. But we will re-examine our own analysis. And if you have any additional follow-up comments based on this new ruling, we'd love to hear it. But other than that, we didn't have anything more that we kind of wanted to raise from your comments on firearms. But if we wanted to open it up again, if there was anything more you all wanted to raise to us or discuss with the group. Again, Katya and Don are on the phone. Laura may join us in person a little bit later. But.
Steve, we're just kind of here if you had any questions about
any
of our practices.
Okay. So,
I think you just had a quick call.
Oh, okay. Well, did you all have any more for
anything more to say beyond our written comments?
Okay, cool. Anybody else? Rest on your briefs. Okay. Well, if that's the case, we will move on from weapons and self-defense phrase and those reports. Again, so what'll happen, I'm kind of looking a little bit down the road. What we hope to do in mid-late January, after we get back comments on this next group of draft reports, is do another across-the-board update. Welcome, Katya and Don are on the phone, and Katya and Don, you should know Laura's joined us now. We just didn't have any real substantive discussion on weapons, other than kind of noting this recent home rule decision by DCCA might bear on some of that, and we're still looking at that. So what's going to happen sequence-wise after this next batch of draft recommendations are issued, come back in early January. In mid-late January, we plan to issue another kind of across-the-board update, right? So, like, the recommendations you all had in weapons, this is similar to what we did last, you know, the end of last year, beginning this year, 2019. Again, kind of across-the-board update that'll have address many of your prior comments. Again, we'll do the same thing with these, like, appendices that go kind of point by point through here's the comments we received and here's how it was addressed, but it'll be kind of a full across the board update. So looking forward to that, that will, of course, be something that will give you all plenty of time to look at. And will hopefully get us close to a voting draft for what we have so far. You know, the number of moving pieces keeps diminishing, and so that's the sequence that we have planned out. Penalties. Let's go ahead and open up then any questions or concerns you all might have about Report 41, our ordinal rankings that we put out. And I, you know, in the memo, I put a few kind of caveats, things to emphasize. I realize, you know, this is always tricky for everybody because it's a chicken egg problem in putting out recommendations on the substantive elements and the penalties. Everybody kind of wants to have one final before they can really assert the other, but we can't keep going back and forth. So at some point, we have to do that. So you know, the primary kind of assumption of the draft recommendations is that we're going with the versions that were last issued, you know, for these offenses. Now, we know they will be changed, maybe in very minor ways, maybe in some more significant ones, based on the comments we received. Again, we'll do a reissue in cross-board reissue in mid-late January. But this, again, is trying to get a sense of where we might have general agreement and where we might have strong disagreement. Again, I put in, you know, the chart. It's up on the screen in very small print, but you all have seen it. We put in some model absolute numbers for statutory maxima. Those are models only. You know, we aren't. If anybody wants to like chime in on that and say this is outrageous, this is like great, one of these two models or what we've kind of previously had, all that information and input is welcome. But it's not kind of squarely what we're concerned with right now. What we really want to try to nail down is, the relative or ordinal ranking for whatever these classifications end up being in terms of their absolute numbers and minima. We're not addressing minima at this point. We're just trying to find the relative severity of these offenses. We've given some different background information on that from, you know, court statistics, to current statutes, to voluntary sentencing guidelines, to some of the public opinion survey work that we've done. So, you know, these are all considerations. Our position is that none of these should be taken. You know, we are not trying to, like, track or follow any one of these as being the most accurate or what our recommendations should follow. We think they're all, though, important indicators of what opinion is out there, right? Be it the public, be it the various parties at the table for the sentencing guidelines, the history of Congress and its wisdom, which set many of our criminal statutes, statutory maxima, all of these are inputs. So, I wanted to open this up. You know, I don't know if there are basic questions about kind of understanding the chart, understanding kind of what you're asked to comment on or how to do that, let alone then maybe more specific questions about this versus that. But we're here to address your questions and about that. So.
Question,
yeah,
about the court data,
okay,
chart that was received.
Okay.
This, I know there was a lot of information on my desk, and it's still through. I'm sure I missed this, and it was set forth clearly somewhere.
Okay.
But can you just help me understand what the columns at the end mean? This was like the Appendix D, which I assume everything is now public. That's my understanding, right?
Yes.
Okay.
So the Appendix D, that's right, is, and it's, that's right.
Can you just explain what columns like BD through BZ mean?
Sure. So the question is about, again, some of the court data and some of the information. This isn't, well, that's the I'm going to go to the 2009 to 2018 BD through BZ. And there are, again, some hidden columns in here, which you can open up. It's just that we tried to contain it. But basically, for the range of sentences that were imposed, and this separates out those that in BD through BH, these included both enhanced and unenhanced versions, convictions and penalties. We just kind of split that out, but you know, the biggest aggregate version is going to be the BD through BH. This is the first cut of the sentence imposed in DC Superior Court for adult defendants who are convicted of whatever the crime listed. And in terms of quantiles, you know, say there were 40 convictions, spread them all out. The 0.5 quantile is essentially getting at what was the mean. Or I'm sorry, not the mean, the mode.
Median.
Median. What was at that 0.5 level? And spreading it out. So it distorts some, right? So for, you know, the 0.9, you know, there might be several around the 90th percentile mark if you spread all those out over a 100-point scale, kind of. But essentially that top level, the 97.5, is about as far as we thought we could kind of get even reliable data. What you will see, and it particularly crops up where there are few convictions for an offense, is where it is often most obvious. But there are clearly sentences that are in there that are illegal, right? And this is from the data we got, right? Like, we're not pulling it out. But data entry errors happen frequently, and particularly since we're taking the first cut at the sentence as initially imposed, right? It might be more rife with errors, those kinds of human errors that came in from court reporting, that would be subsequently remedied. The reason, you know, you kind of have to choose on which cut you're doing. The last in time is always changing, right? Because that information is always being updated with all sorts of, you know, subsequent changes by the court to the sentence. So we went with the first in time, and
that represents the maximum sentence that would have been imposed. It's sort of the closest you can say, given.
Like, that's
you
right.
I'm not saying 100%.
That's right. So at 100%, we are going to get a lot of errors. At going to 0%, we would get a lot of errors. Even at the 97.5, and at the lowest end, we had a 2.5. Both of those, you will still see some errors, which is to say, and errors just meaning, look, the data seems to reflect a sentence that is illegal. It's outside the statutory maximum. Usually, I think the most common problem seems to be simply it was a month's, you see this at the bottom particularly, you know, a month's versus years, you know, that there was, while the system is all supposed to be, you know, put in terms of months, the court reporter or the clerk at that point, you know, put it in differently. So, and there was some confusion, days versus, you know, the units got switched somehow, and that's what's going on. That's a guess, total guess. But, you know, intuitively, it seems to make sense from some of the things we see. But we don't know. We did not screen this specifically to filter out. Because the error may be in something else. The error may be in lack of marking an enhancement, for instance, right? That is what accounts for it being kicked up to a higher level. We don't know. So we felt that the 97.5 and the 2.5 give very kind of the most reliable but also strong indicators of the maximum and minimum that you're really seeing in the core.
Can you break it down just a little? It's been a long time since I took stats.
Sure, no.
It took me a while to review all these stuff, and I'm not sure I understand it. So just on this line, 6, 12, 18, this is telling me month sentence at the median is 6, right?
Yes.
Ooh.
For, this is, we got...
UF.
A version of UF. You know, again, like, there might be multiple.
Yeah, the offense itself is
matter. Okay.
That's not what my issue is.
Okay.
So this is telling me the mean for all of whatever that offense is 6 months. 0.9 is telling me that...
Right. So again,
go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, so like for this one, great. We've got a large number of convictions.
Yeah.
1,054 convictions over that 10-year period. I take those and I divide it up into 10 equal groups, right? From lowest to greatest. Right at the 50% mark, or you know, what do I find there? What conviction from lowest to when I rank them all that way? 6 months. If I go up to the 90% mark, what conviction do I find there? A 12-month
one. So that's the 90th worst grouping?
Most severe sentence. That's right. If again, take whatever pool of convictions or stats, I spread them all out, and I calculate what was, or at that 90th percentile level, that's what you're going to find.
Did you cross-reference at all to see if the proposed ones match up with kind of the maximum sentences they're imposed, or that are?
Yeah, so we internally kind of did. Mm-hmm. There's an art here, not a science. Right? And the problem is, right, finding what corresponds to what. For a few offenses, there's a very clean one-to-one, right? For most, it isn't so clean, and especially when you start to think about enhancements, all the assault with intent to version, right? Like, it gets very complicated to see what over, under the current system corresponds to what in the revised code. Now, that said, I mean, those of all of us here who have worked with these things before, these offenses, kind of know basically what to look at. There might be some fringe stuff. We definitely looked at these numbers hard in coming up with our recommendations. Now, which isn't to say they necessarily always follow this, right? So I think, there are a few places where our recommendations would significantly change kind of what we see here. The biggest one is burglary, right? Actually, it's the biggest standout. And
5 years, it was like a...
Yeah, the complexity of this in part, right, is that you use the tools you have. Burglary in the district, right, is written in a very broad way. It has statutory maxima that are extremely high by national standards. Our penalties are high by national standards. I don't know if I sent out, but if not, I apologize and will send it out. There's a, the Department of Justice did an analysis of state time served and imposed in state prisons relatively recently. I think it's 2016 data, right, for different categories of offense. Now, again, what are they lumping in when they have crimes of violence? What are they lumping in for these different things? It varies, but it's pretty clear that they get some very low numbers for median sentences for burglars, lower than we would. Now, does that mean that we are inappropriately high? I think, again, this is all very, you know, charging decisions, all this is very complex. That burglary charge coming in at a very high number may reflect many other things going on in the case, and this was the most serious charge that you go with based on where the statutes are. And so, yes, while that is the label that came out with that, you know, penalty, it reflects an array of behavior that would be accounted for otherwise under the revised code, right? This is the trick on a lot of issues. PFCV, right? There are a number of instances where that is one of the most serious convictions in the case. There may be a lot of other behavior and conduct going on with that, but there are lots of good reasons why U.S. Attorney's Office may choose to kind of pursue that particular charge in order to address behavior. So we're really reluctant to kind of, again, draw the straight lines from anything, you know, because we understand that, you know, prosecutors have to work with, again, the statutory framework they have, do the best they can within the range of those options. And so then the court stats that we see resulting from that don't necessarily mean that, oh, if you lower burglary this amount or you raise another crime this amount, it will change the outcomes that you see in court. It may for that offense, but other offenses may be charged more, right? The liability for that may run consecutive, it may run concurrent. We haven't even talked about mandatory minima. It's such a complex nest of considerations. But all that said, we did kind of really find these maxima useful. It's also interesting to see, again, where the 50th percentile is too. Often it's very different. For some offenses, the unenhanced, you look at unenhanced sentences, very different from enhanced. Often not. Often not. More often not. So,
and this right. chart, sorry. So yeah. This chart, is this the most serious charge of conviction? That's what this represents?
No, it's for each charge. That's right. So this is not by case.
One case could fall under multiple different
charges.
That's
right. Okay. That's right. So this is not by case. This is only by charge. And so, right. You know, and that's a different scope way to look at this. Mm-hmm. We do want to kind of get at each, you know, consider each charge separately. But again, in envisioning, again, how the system works now and how it would work if, you know, all of our recommendations, we don't think we can really model that, right? Like, you know, give prosecutors a different set of tools, give police a different set of tools. You will, they will use those tools differently, right? There's still going to be a lot of discretion and choice about how to charge different matters. And I think one of the key questions for everybody needs to be, look, here's a typical fact pattern I see. How would that be accounted for in the revised system, right? Maybe I wouldn't anymore choose, you know, burglary because that isn't the most serious charge. Instead, it's the assault that's going on inside, right? It's the threat. It's the, you know, and it's the firearm charge. Or it's, these are the four charges I would be going with. And, you know, if they were consecutive, I would be looking at the same kind of liability I had before. But that's really the question then, you know, like, would those does that potential liability, is it going to shake out to be the same in the end? These are the kinds of questions that I think like have to be considered. But you know, hopefully, I know your offices all have some, you know, I think the U.S. Attorney's Office maybe to more than others, you know, has its own kind of internal data kind of collection. But I'm hoping, you know, this is helpful, particularly for misdemeanors, right? I don't know that this information has been out there before. The Sentencing Commission, you know, has put on its website, in some sense, more information, right? For felonies only, it has, you know, at one point it had, I think, even PDIDs, but, you know, it has criminal history scores. It has a lot of information public on its website for felonies, right? But for misdemeanor charges, no. There's been a dearth of kind of data and what's going on. So, yeah, and you can also see some trends over time. Again, unfortunately, due to a lot of the court's restrictions, we couldn't, there's a lot of less than 20s, right? We can't report any cell that is without a number that is less than 20. Now, their rules around that are not entirely clear because, you know, there are ways that you can effectively show a number less than 20 by, you know, and so it's a bit artificial, you know. We've submitted this to the court. The court approved it. I think it, you know, complies with their policy. We tried to be really careful in running it through them. So that said, yeah, if you have other questions, you know, I don't want to get too much into particular details about, you know, any one thing, but I'm happy to have side discussions. If we get to the point where there's like, you all think there's an error or particularly like a systemic error, let me know. We worked with an outside statistician to do some of the work with the data on this, and maybe we need to like try to bring them back into the conversation to answer some of those questions. So if you see things that look abnormal, I would say one, you know, again, in particular cases, there are just errors, and even just looking at the 97.5 percentile or the 2.5, they still creep in on some of this. And because they're part of the set, they might kind of skew things a bit. We can look though. The other thing I kind of put in the memo, depending on how you might sort or use the information. please remember that often, and this is just following the court data, right? You know, there are multiple entries for one citation. So, right here, you know, Title 7, 2502.01, that one is with a A, A-X, A-Y. There is no data dictionary in the court which distinguishes A, A-X, A-Y. Why there are different lines in the court data for this, sometimes you can kind of suss it out, right? It's an M versus F, misdemeanor felony. Okay, sometimes there's all sorts of other symbols. So the key is, I think, also when you are looking at this, you might see something kind of aberrant for an offense. Double check that is like the only version of that offense, right? You know, for instance, here, if you are looking at the version that has only 21 charges, and not the version of the offense in the records that has 4,688, you might end up with a very kind of skewed set of numbers, and you know, and that would be misleading. You got to look for like, oh, are there other entries in the set for that offense? And we wanted to preserve, we didn't want to like lump all these distinctions together because they may be significant, Maybe you all even kind of know, or which would be great. We did enter a column. It's kind of hidden in the kind of portion delivered, but it's a column C that was a macro citation. And so you could use that, and that would that gets rid of these distinctions that you see in the micro citations, but keeps it at the same. They're still broken out in separate rows. Again, so it's complicated, and that's kind of the nature of the data.
What do you view as the effect of the general enhancements? Like, would it bump it up one class? I was just looking back at
In the revised code.
Classes.
In the revised code?
Yeah.
For burglary, for example, I would think that there's a lot of cases we would have now where someone's got people who've got very high criminal history scores, who've got 5 prior burglary convictions, and we might offer a plea where we don't, where we waive the enhancement papers, but the sentence is still going to be at the high end of the guideline range because of the prior history. So that's another factor I think that could change things would be if the enhancement papers, the way the enhancements applied, I think would make a difference as well in the revised code.
Yeah, absolutely. And right. Besides, you know, attempt, we didn't address those at this point. And I think, like, if that would be the key point, right, like, it'd be helpful, you know, kind of hear that, right? Like, look, maybe this is okay, relatively speaking, but what we would really want and need, or, you know, need is an adjustment to bump it, if it's one class, if it's two classes, maybe it's a set number of years, right? These are all different ways that you might, through the use of those enhancements, get there. In general, right, we see virtually no use of, and this probably doesn't surprise you, particularly like the repeat offender enhancements. Those seem to be typically waived as part of plea agreement, right? Besides while armed, it's, you know, senior, minors, enhancements are used a little bit. Virtually none of anything else, right? But that is a consideration, right? Again, in the revised scheme, that could do more work, right? And effectively bump these up. So we haven't set that. If you'd like to make a say, like, we would do this, but then we would expect, you know, that, again, it would be a one-class increase for, felon repeat offender, or a two-class increase for crime of violence. Or, again, maybe it's not that. Maybe it's a set number of years. It's 1 year. It's 3 years. These are options. I would say, like, it is an interesting problem that a number of jurisdictions have wrestled with at the statutory level, and you all may know better in terms of the Sentencing Commission's work, whether and how to account for, you know, repeat offending in criminal histories, right? This has kind of become an increasingly controversial area because it has the potential, and there have been a number of research studies, to kind of lock in the effects of past incarceration and or disparities in sentencing, right? And that is, you know, there are questions, you know, are you effectively kind of double counting at the broadest policy level, you know, a person's culpability if they have served their time in the past? It's a rich area. all I kind of want to say, many policy considerations at play. And I would not be surprised to receive comments that have a spectrum of how important it is to have kind of repeat offender penalty enhancements that are significant versus that they are inappropriate altogether. any comments that you have on that would be welcome at this point. But I will say this too. I think again, we have set out for the repeat offender enhancements in particular that those would, you know, they go by felony, they go by violence, and they would apply then across the board equally, right? So our hope is that with this ordinal ranking, again, while you might be concerned about the absolute number, putting that aside and whether a felony repeat offender enhancement is going to be able to bump you up one class or two classes or 1 year or not at all, the relative rankings should stay the same, right? And so again, hopefully at this stage, we can focus on the relative rankings and know that whatever those enhancements are in terms of the absolute amount, the multiplication, or like the additional time they're getting in an absolute number, it is whatever the relative ranking was plus something, or you know, up two classes, whatever it is. But the relative rankings then wouldn't change. So that's why we kind of thought we could put off that conversation on enhancements a little bit longer. But again, we'd welcome any input, and if that's a critical matter, and you want to get ahead of that, we definitely kind of welcome comments on that. Anything else? Again, on these inputs.
Question on the survey.
Sure.
I was having trouble trying to incorporate what I thought the takeaways of that.
Okay.
Given the way it was set up.
Yeah.
So if you could spend 2 minutes on the survey,
you
that
bet.
Might be helpful.
Yeah. A specific question, you just kind of want me to kind of go over generally kind of what
just
the setup
generally.
Was?
Generally.
Okay.
Question I had is,
yeah,
the ones that were pegged to, in other words, there were like a list of five or whatever,
yep,
that the various ones were pegged to, who determined the pegging of those? Because I think in some of them, had I had input, I might have...
Sure.
Pegged them differently or
sure.
at different peggings, which I think then goes to how people peg it if something is set at one level versus another relative to another offense. So
yeah.
I just wanted a little bit more on that as well.
Sure. So the design of the survey, right, and I put it up on the screen, and I think what Dave is particularly focusing on is the basic design was... Respondents were given a chart to use in rating the seriousness of offenses. They could rate offenses from 0 to 12. And they were asked, you know, to look at this chart. The chart had, not for all numbers 0 to 12, but for basically all the evens,
yeah.
2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12, a description of conduct that might be comparable. So again, if you're asked to rate shooting someone with a gun, causing them serious injury, you're asked to then kind of look at your chart and be, okay, I want to rate this. How do I compare it to what's on the chart? And you come up with a variety of responses, right? In setting up what those milestones, what we call them often on the chart, that was... Our working with last spring, this team of students over at George Washington University, some master students, we came up with this design based on kind of looking at a number of alternatives that are out there. The literature on this kind of thing, questioning the public about the seriousness of offenses, is fairly scant, particularly in recent years. It's very crude in recent years. And the most helpful things, you know, we get that obviously people think, you know, killing is worse than stealing a small sum of money. You know, it is in fact in the subtleties, right? And the smaller distinctions where we had a lot of questions and wanted to get at least an approximate sense. So we came up with a 12-point system, which was a lot. That's pushing it. That's a lot of differentiation to ask people to make, right? We, in setting the milestones, opted to keep everything kind of on a physical scale. So the milestones are all assault-type injuries, or at the top end, killing, death. But they didn't bring in what some other studies have done to conflate, which is to put in, for instance, a property offense and say a theft of X amount of dollars. The two most recent kind of comparable studies like this were done by Professor Paul Robinson, who you've seen cited in a lot of her work, who does a lot of criminal code work for Pennsylvania and New Jersey. And in those studies, he did have, their milestones had different, you know, they would have a property offense, an offense against persons, sometimes even a third type of offense. So the milestones themselves, again, they are what people, I think you're right, are asked to rate and conform their intuitions around, right? That sets the rating scale. And we felt very confident that the rating scale we gave was accurate in the sense of being kind of non-controversial in its ordinal steps, number one. It may not be, two, it roughly maps onto offenses that you all will know that weren't spelled out, right, to any survey takers, but, you know, a moderate injury requiring immediate medical treatment, for instance, a broken bone. That's felony assault. You know, we weren't describing it that way to them. We aren't saying that. We aren't using absolute numbers. But we found it useful and intuitive to kind of set this up to map these milestones to approximate things that you all would know and that we know and are kind of common. So there you have a six is that. You go down to four, you've got a minor injury, treatable at home. For instance, a black eye, comparable to a 180-day, you know, a simple assault. If you were to map these on, and again, this is not what respondents were asked to do. We were not asking about absolute numbers. But if you were to do that, you said, well, look, what you have for milestone six is a simple assault, 180-day offense. You have one class in between, similar to a one-year misdemeanor, and then we have the next jump up, 4 to 3 years for felony assault. 3-year felony assault would go here at the milestone six. You go up two levels, or you go up, the next class is kind of empty at five, or I'm sorry, at seven. And then you get up to eight, which is a description, basically, of ag assault. Serious injury that risks but does not cause death. 10 years. In between the three for felony assault, milestone six, and the 10-year for ag assault, milestone eight, you would get, you know, it's kind of easy to see how a milestone seven would be around a 5-year offense. These are ways of extrapolating from what's here into kind of where things are in the current code. But again, we weren't asking about absolute numbers. But as you kind of look at this and kind of interpret it, it might be a useful thing. This is a rough tool. Again, I don't want to like put too much stock in any particular finding. Each group, you know, these were tested at a couple different times, right? Different panels, respondents from a particular panel can have significantly different responses, particularly for offenses where kind of at the margins, we're talking with one of the statisticians that we work with, you know, he kind of said, like, look, when you do this kind of survey work, if people don't have a strong feeling, right, about a particular offense, you're going to get a wider range of kind of, you know, there's more going to be more noise in the system, right? But this is true of any survey, right? Right? This is why, you know, surveys have to go with large numbers. It's had 400 respondents. And we stuck with the relative numbers here. I would not, while I noted that, you know, the description of milestone eight is very similar to current, you know, aggravated assault, which currently has a 10-year max. This does by no means means that, like, you know, respondents feel that, you know, everything that they rated, that was rated the mean was above that, should be just above 10 years. Like, that would be a totally a false statement. What it means is that they did rate that, you know, these types of behaviors, something like shooting with a gun, causing moderate injury, right? They rated as, here in 8.2, a little bit more serious than a serious injury caused by other means. Okay, you know what? That's not so different from ADW and comparison to where ag assault is, right? Like, you know, like, not so different. But it would also suggest that, you know, that was with a moderate injury. What if the injury was less? And I think we did have a question, although I'm not going to see it, obviously, picking it out right away on the fly. So yes, I think, again, we found it a useful tool for the relative rankings. It does map on, if one wished, to both the revised criminal code and the current DC code in terms of these milestones. You know, they're, if you held those constant and you held a certain absolute number, you could then kind of infer where everything else would go. But that's, those are assumptions, right? You'd have to, like, you know. So that's an overview. Look, the findings, I would emphasize again, these are registered voters. You might get a different pool yet if you're getting non-registered, you know, residents who are not registered voters.
How would they contact again?
How were they contacted? So the selection of respondents, YouGov, which was the vendor that was used, maintains that kind of a, what they call it, kind of a panel system. And I put in a article or two on this. What they do is they don't do the kind of cold solicitation to get responses. They maintain a standing panel, as I understand it, you know, over 1,000 folks, that they select, cultivate over time, get their demographic information. And what they are trying to do is build out, not for any, not for criminal justice, not for any particular topic, right? Like, but they are trying to get a demographic spread so that their overall panel and any kind of subset of it, they're going to be able to get robust numbers for a demographically representative panel. And it's not perfect, right? What they did was they get more responses than the 400 cutoff that we received back. And then they kind of randomly, for any that don't meet the demographic outlier, so say that there were, you know, way more white female respondents than census data would suggest are in the district, they would randomly select a number of those to not include in the results, right? So so that what the panel ends up having more, being more representative of DC demographics than you might otherwise get. So that was a consideration. It is weighed in that way. Again, there's some background information on there that kind of explain more in detail why they did that. I will say this process for web-based surveys it's been peer-reviewed. It's come out very well. Pew, which does a lot of other surveys too, has, you know, it's outperformed Pew in terms of its accuracy. So it's kind of considered the gold standard for web-based surveys of this number, of this sort. And the number of responses we have is robust. The statisticians we talked to, you know, felt very good about these results. While it drives me crazy to kind of think that, you know, you see some responses, because we included the raw scores, you know, you can look at that, you know, that, you know, some people for some of the
There was a lot of variance.
Yeah, you know, you will get people who responded to, POCA, possessing an open container of alcohol, who ranked that up there. They gave it an 11, you know, up there with, you know, murder, right? Like, and, you know...
It's the problems in your neighborhood.
Well, it may be that. It may be an error. It may be they misread the instructions. Who knows? The point is, right, we have... You go with the large numbers, you look at the mean, the median, and the mode, you see the kind of relative distribution, and you use that with a grain of salt to kind of get where people are. It may be that, right, some people felt so outraged that about some of this, what would otherwise the other 90% of the population would think is very low level, that they kind of were making a point on it. It may be an error. Again, who knows? We don't know. Can't look behind the veil there. What we can do is we can use the means, median mode. I would say, too, that at the extremes, high and low, the methodology or the means in particular is less accurate as a measure of central tendency, they call in, you know, in statistics. I think, you know, the suggestion then is you look more at the median or the mode at the low-level offenses because the data itself is skewed, right? Like, you know, the biggest numbers are from zero and then they kind of taper down that way. They have a tail kind of going just one direction instead of it being the kind of the bell curve. And when it's more the traditional bell curve, the mean is often considered the more accurate kind of measure. Anyway, we could talk about... big picture, this is food for thought, right? I think if there were one or two questions which were redone, again, we did some different time-wise. We had some kind of early spring, some very recent, and, you know, there was a lot of criminal justice news in the headlines the last 6 months, right? Some of those... The bulk of this comes after all that, right? The bulk of this comes, was it August? It was August, yeah, basically. You know, so to the extent, right, you know, these small little things, trends in news might have an impact on how people respond. You're going to see changes over time. But, right, we felt it a very kind of useful tool overall. And not so different than you might see in some of the court stats for a lot of things, right? Like, again, these different, if you look at it in terms of relative rankings, court stats, sentencing guidelines, public opinion, there's some friction there. Often there's a lot of friction between those three things and what's on paper. Right, what the statutory maxima is, and that is our biggest concern. Right, the other discrepancies between this is what sentencing commission stakeholders say, this is what the public in this survey mechanism say, this is what judges are putting out. Those differences are less. And at least for judges in particular, too, in the sense of guidance, again, there are other considerations about how you're given this array of statutes, you know, how PFCB or some of the, you know, these other offenses that, you know, how that figures in depends on the array of charges that you have available and the array of penalties. Anything else I can say, generally or specifically?
I assume we're still kind of using the same statutory framework that exists now for kind of requiring some backup time for supervised release or something, so you couldn't impose the full 5 years or whatever it might be up front. That would be unchanged.
That's right. We are not assuming any changes on that at this point. Council wants to reconsider the whole parole framework and everything, more power to them in the next
permission.
That's just parole.
There's a lot of big picture stuff that we on particularly on the back end, right, we're not planning to make any recommendations about changes to those backup time, for instance, at this time. Yeah, like. But
a five-year statutory max means that you can only get 3 years up front.
3 years up front. That's and I assume that would still translate. Yes. Yeah. So, right, as you're doing calculations now, again, on the ordinal rankings, that shouldn't make a difference, right? Although, the way the whole backup time system works, it isn't quite proportionate, right? Right? Like it's like, you know, the 3 year, 5 years, yeah, you're essentially gets chopped down to 3 years, which is like a 40% decrease. And then, but you know, it's much less when it's like, you know, on a major sentence and it's only a 5 year decrease, you know, like, or no decrease for, you know, class A. So backup time isn't like a clear proportionate kind of effect, right? It has jumps at times, right, depending on the classification. Yeah. Other thoughts or questions? One other thing, and again, I apologize if I haven't sent it, I will send it around because very interesting. You know, looking at how other jurisdictions sentencing works is very complex, right? But there was this one Department of Justice BJS report that at a macro level kind of looks at other jurisdictions, provides kind of maxima that were sentenced and actual time served, which is also starkly different, right, than we have in the district. And those numbers give some perspective also. We are not planning to do more with that as a general matter. We may, depending on the feedback we get, like if there's a lot of intense scrutiny of like a particular offense, maybe it's burglary, right? And then we will kind of take some time and do a more in-depth looking at other jurisdictions. Okay, what do they do? It is incredibly complex though, as we've like the little bit we've tried, right? They have their own guideline systems. They have their own, again, set of kind of overlapping offenses. They have different rules about consecutive concurrent sentencing. They have different enhancements that may or may not show up, right? It can be very misleading just to look up, do a 50-state survey of statutory maxima for a given offense elsewhere. That may be not at all a good indicator of what that jurisdiction is actually doing with that offense. Just as with us, right? It often isn't a good indicator of what's going on. So we think that's of limited use, but I will send around this BJS report that kind of like looks at, again, what is the time served, right? What is the time imposed? Those, at a basic level, really kind of set some general expectations for what's reasonable in the national picture. If there are other, again, so if any of this you find what seem to be flaws, typos, methodological concerns, let us know. If there are additional types of information you wish you had, let us know. So on court data, right, one thing that would be very interesting that we were not able to obtain would be an anonymized, you know, indicator of the sentencing judge, right? Anecdotally, much of the discrepancy in sentencing depends on who the sentencing judge is, and for something which, you know, a felony one calendar over court, we have these decile breakouts, and, you know, one or two judges may be very much accounting for all the sentences you see at one end of the spectrum or at the other, right? It is not then, it would, so it may not be fair to say that the court data we're seeing at the high end or the low end, or, you know, or where the, especially where the numbers are low, are representative of the court or, you know, as a whole, right? It may very well be that one or two judges are accounting for a lot of what you're seeing in any particular place. We would love to be able to address that in some way. That information we may, in the future, request again from the court, but I think it's information that they are not
ever going to give you.
not gettable. It's a huge caveat that everybody should really think about on the court data, particularly at the maximum and the minimum. You know, it may be one judge is responsible for what we're seeing at that. So in terms of, again, trying to extrapolate and say, oh, the court data shows X, right? And that has some significance of, like, the court in, you know, the, you know, those who deal with this day in and day out believe that X. Well, it may be as simple as actually one or two people over in the courthouse, you know, believe that this is much more severe than this, or is much less severe than this, right?
Ask for folks who've spent more time with the numbers than I have, which would be if anyone spent any time with the numbers than I have. Was anybody surprised by any of it? I sort of feel like we probably all would be like, that yes, there's like some judge who's all the way here, like, you know, and some judge who's here, but that there's some medium where we're sort of like, oh yeah, I thought that offense carried that.
Well, also given this compliance with the sentencing guidelines, I would have been shocked if there was much more variation.
Well, misdemeanors might be interesting.
Yeah.
Although misdemeanors have a lot of room to move around.
But Steve just brought this up as a question. Do we know if this is, like, if somebody gets a sentence of like 12 months, he has all but 3 months. Would this reflect the 12 months or the 3 months? Do you know?
I'm sorry, the 12 months that got what to 3 months?
Like, if the judge imposes like 12 months execution of sentence suspended as to all but 3 months, would this show the 3 months or the 12 months?
This would show the 12 months for that column that we were looking at before, but let me open this.
Like, I see vending without a license, the 0.5 is 2 months. I'm going to guess it was 2 months he has assault.
So and let me...
people are getting 2 months in jail for vending without a license.
So here we have some of these other columns, right? If you break those out, we'll show actual time to serve. So suspended, you know, so that then you're going to see, like, a bunch of misdemeanors really, you know,
right?
But for most felonies, you know, not that... So it varies. And then the other thing, again, is like the first cut in time, right? Like, this is the initial sentencing, you know, imposed. And there might be...
The actual serve wouldn't count. So if someone got 12 months ESSL and then it was revoked, and they actually got the 12 months, we wouldn't see that?
That's right. So we don't see the later in time, the later cut in time. That's right. And that can cut many ways, right? But that's a fundamental... consideration. I also want to emphasize, and again, it's not you all, I think, kind of get this, but, you know, I think you all also have to deal with others who may have inquiries and be like, why is this number so different than what we heard from over here? And, you know, there are many possible responses. One is this, like, we're looking at the first cut in time, right? Sentencing Commission may not be. So when the Sentencing Commission puts out its numbers, it may be looking at something else. They're using different cutoff time frames, right? Like, again, we're using this time frame for dispositions that were entered in Superior Court 2009, you know, whatever it is, we kind of on the calendar year. Others may not do that the same way, right? And the Sentencing Commission in particular has its own kind of way of doing that. So the numbers that might come from other sources might not quite line up with this for those reasons too, right? Like if you look at any 1 year period or even 2 year period, yeah, if you're doing the later in time, you're catching a lot of dispositions that are, you know, cases that might have been held over a long time, are coming up again. So I caution against, again, kind of a clean comparison of this. Shouldn't these numbers look like the numbers over here? You know, the sentencing commission versus this. Well, kind of, right? But there are a number of other considerations. So it, and again, I think you all at the table understand the complexity of this. You know, a member of the public, a journalist who hasn't like kind of waded in this complexity before may not, right? So it's hard to communicate, right? These things, but there it is. Other general questions? Dora, were you surprised by anything?
I found the whole thing shocking. I couldn't believe any of it. When I spent a long time just really digging into it.
Yeah.
I think some of the felony murder scenarios were interesting in that a lot of the specified conduct indicated no intent to actually have someone be killed, but because that was the outcome, they were ranked fairly high.
Right.
In some cases, more than intentional sexual assault. So that to me in the super high groupings was a big standout, because I think that's
for surveys.
Yep. Yes, okay. I think the literature is kind of moving away from that. But mm-hmm. That seemed to be mm-hmm. that was one where the public desire for punishment was greater than I would have anticipated, just where the academy kind of is on that issue. So.
Sure. I mean, I will note that, like, on the surveys, right, like, none of the surveys, now, and again, and we ourselves would quibble with ourselves, and do quibble with ourselves, about the articulation of kind of a manslaughter type offense for Milestone 10, right? But nothing, you know, at least, you know, again, there were individual responses that got up in that level. And you know, so robbing someone's wallet, shooting them and causing a life-threatening injury, not killing them. You know, for the mode, you had, right, you know, almost a quarter of respondents, right, going up to, well, that's the same as first degree murder, right? The median and mean, much less, more at manslaughter level or something, you know, some sort of mitigation type thing. And, you know, never did the mean get up into any of this. So, you know, I think the big picture, while it is true, this shows like a significant chunk, right, of respondents feel that, you know, some of these felony murder scenarios, so here we go, accidentally killing a person, knocking them down during a robbery. All right, you have a good chunk saying, yeah, that's murder. You have a quarter of people equating that with something higher. Oh, I'm sorry, that's a nine.
That's a nine.
Right, so the mode there is lower. Let me find out something example. There's nothing else that gets, oh, here we had a 12. Well, there, right?
That was, yeah.
So, right, you know, threatening a face-to-face, what, yeah, I don't know what to say about that. I will say, you know, again, for while the general statistics spiel would be at the outliers at the top and the bottom, where the distribution curve is very much skewed to one side, you should look more at the median or the mode. Otherwise, the mean is usually the better indicator. So here, you know, maybe the mean is the better indicator. But again, you know, this poses a lot of, you know, now again, these scenarios, much could be quibbled with any particular scenario, right, and the articulation of it, right? It may be to, and I'm sure if we hung too much on any one of these responses, you all rightly would point out that it appears to be, it pitches it as more lenient, as if it was less severe conduct or more severe conduct, or the phrasing, you know, seemed to, like, you know, spin people one way or the other. This is true, and, you know, those distinctions, we tried to keep the summary short, but then people fill in the gaps, right, with their own details, right? And this is just an inherent problem with any of these surveys, right? To try to get an array of responses to the basic distinctions we're looking at, we can't have a paragraph long thing that people, you know, like,
or multiple wordings.
Or multiple wordings.
Try, you know, describing an offense in three different ways and see how differently it
Works out. You might be able to do that with a focus group. You could do this if you were willing to spend hundreds of thousands of dollars. You know, but it's just, like, it's a lot of time. So this is what we've got. I think it's something. Again, I wouldn't pin everything on any one of these points, but I think it lends support for some general trends. One of the general trends, right, is that weapons make a difference, right? Like, you know, and this definitely upholds that, right? Guns make a difference. It also would suggest that guns don't make a massive difference, right? So that under the current code, we have, you know, the 30-year statutory max, you know, an additional 30 years to the statutory maximum for any offense while armed. This would run against that. That kind of, like, massive doubling, tripling of whatever the underlying offense was by the mere presence of a gun, not even the use, right? But there is some bump that you're seeing in most of these responses between an armed version and an unarmed version, or at least where a weapon is used. Again, a number of these responses would suggest virtually no difference where it was a more significant offense, like, you know, an ag assault type harm, and a weapon was merely possessed but not used. This is intuitive in a way. At the upper levels, the added effect of the gun kind of washes out, but at the lower levels, it jumps it up quite a bit. And again, that's what we see in ADW, right? You know, being like, okay, even a small harm, but it was with a gun, you're looking at much more liability. Anyway, so, and I think, again, on the weapons, you know, the way the classes in the revised criminal code would work, largely, I think, are largely in line with and consistent with these survey results. Burglary, again, this is a place where, again, it comes way down. Right. But again, we weren't, you know, the conduct, the underlying conduct, you know, a burglary charge qua burglary, entering a dwelling or occupied dwelling or, you know, some other store with intent to commit a crime, that bare description that we have now, it just doesn't, you know, that doesn't do much. But if there's an assault occurring inside, if there's a sexual assault, right, like, you know, that's where the real liability comes in. And we do still see that. Any other questions or things to just kind of talk over? Again, I would encourage everybody to, like, yeah, we obviously just spent a fair bit of time just looking at these numbers, too, and trying to see where they go in a different direction. And I feel, in general, we're not totally in line with it in the Report 41 recommendations, but we feel like this largely reflects kind of where the relative rankings are. Begs questions still about the absolute numbers for maxima, whether there should be a mandatory minima. Putting those aside, just in terms of the relative rankings, hopefully this is useful. And again, not so different. Well, again, the Sentencing Commission and a lot of its guidelines are constrained by the statute, or that's the choice. That's how the Sentencing Commission did it, right? You know, we don't have other gradations for robbery. It's just robbery. And, you know, the Sentencing Commission chose not to break that out into smaller bits for its purposes. It's stuck with that huge array of conduct that is in the code. So in some of those offenses where we may not be consistent, but if you look at the top end, the most severe forms, we think this would be. So,
are you kind of wedded to like the 1 degree difference in gradations with offenses, like maybe first degree burglary? I think we're gonna file some comments on making that higher, but you know, maybe that could rise far more proportionally than maybe second or third degree burglary would.
No, that is fair.
To like one gradation between them, or are you okay?
No, I think there's at least a couple places where we too kind of thought that like there's a jump, right?
Like the in your home is just such a violation.
And so that's totally legit. The problem in a lot of these is that even with this number of gradation or categories, classes. Which again kind of map on to, you know, again, you could skew it up, you could skew it down, but like the key, what you see in the code of one year, 3 year, 5 year, 10, like take those as your marks, right? And assume that some way those are going to plug in, you know, to this kind of classification scheme. You break it up, and like sometimes there's a problem like doing more than one class, like you just run out of space, right? Like, where on the chart can this go? It doesn't kind of match up. But yeah, I definitely would agree that like there are places where the first degree seems, yeah, two classes above. So feel free to make that's a legit a welcome comment or criticism.
I think there was one place where we were looking at the offenses and the relative ranking of offenses where we may recommend more degrees in a given offense to make it proportionate with other offenses that have more degrees to them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, and I assume that's fair game.
Yeah, that's fair game also. You know, the other thing we did was you will see at some points, you know, some versions overlap. So, you know, an enhanced version where we have some enhancements, right, of, you know, one offense might end up being the same as the next degree up at its regular version, you know, unenhanced version. And it may be that, like, if you end up marking things the same class, well, then we should just get rid of that grade. If there's a gradation, that gradation shouldn't do any work. Again, this is very kind of open to your suggestions. I will say this, like, you know, if the cat's all spread off in different directions and everybody's kind of focusing on different things and doing kind of, you know, blowing up different corners, it will be tricky for us to kind of integrate that. So, you know, everything's welcome. We will integrate, but the more you know, your comments can kind of spell out what the underlying concern is. Sometimes that might be a more useful thing for us to grapple with, rather than like, oh, you know, kind of detailed this change here, this change here, this change here, without kind of understanding the underlying rationale. It's easier to work with the rationales, I guess, in terms of like being able to fashion a remedy that we can work together. Any last thoughts? And if not, you know, look, we welcome comments. This is going to go on. Depending on the degree of cohesion in the feedback we get and kind of this relative rankings, we may need to do kind of another round of this before moving forward to kind of put hard numbers on, address, you know. Or maybe there are just like a few crucial areas, and I'm hoping that's the case, right? Where PDS, USAOIG all come back and kind of say, like, all right, you know, all right-ish, or maybe don't even say that, right? But that your comments kind of focus on a few target areas, a few offenses or clusters of offenses that you think should be more significant, less significant, and kind of give some underlying rationale for that. You know, again, maybe it's, you know, the harm, the invasiveness is just much greater in this situation, or, you know, that would be useful. We're not going to please everybody on this. There's a one possible way to go is to have some different variations going forward. I've heard before from the council, not putting current representative on the spot at all, but you know, that, you know, us coming up with multiple options is somewhat helpful, but and it is, what is very helpful is to, like, come up with a central recommendation that we can hopefully all pretty much all get on board with, and then record any differences so that those can be kind of part of the conversation going forward, but that we have a central recommendation.
I'll just say quickly, I think obviously the entire project forthcoming, the ordinal rankings would be the most interesting. I think there's going to always be quibbling on the margins about what this particular offense carries, but it was like when I was grading papers, once you had the ordinal ranking of the worst versus best paper, it's easy to at that point say, okay, I feel comfortable with an A or 10 years at this point and across the board. So I think differences of opinion reflecting those discrepancies, like, I think a property offense of $25,000 is equivalent to this level of bodily injury or whatever it might be. That's where kind of the rubber meets the road in a lot of these cases.
Yeah. And I think, again, like, you know, main offenses, like, there are some hard cases here. We scratch our heads on too, where, you know, there are offenses that are rarely charged, right? And it's apples and oranges and rutabagas, and it's, you know, really hard to figure in how the rutabaga works. But if we can get a large amount of agreement on essentially core offenses against persons and a few core property offenses, I think that will go a long ways towards, the rest of it will be derivative from that. So,
and decriminalizing rutabagas.
Decriminalizing possession of rutabagas.
That's some good news.
There we go. Rutabagas for everybody. That maybe we can't agree to. Great. If there's no more questions, we'll, again, happy to meet separately with folks if you have questions. But thank you.
Thank you so much.